It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 527. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. The show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Facebook, facebook.com/miketechshow, and also MikeNationNet. We also have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all the past shows, the audio, the show notes, everything going all the way back to show number one. Last week, I was traveling, and I'm glad to be back. Had a nightmare coming back from Las Vegas. We were celebrating my youngest son's 21st birthday, Tyler. Sad to report that I didn't do very well winning, or maybe there would have been no more shows, could retire, but that didn't happen. Had a really good time, but the flight on Monday was canceled coming back home due to mechanical failure, and we had to wait, and then it was a mad scramble to get on flights to get home, and every flight was packed, and it was just a nightmare. And my whole family was split up on different flights. Luggage did not make it until 7 o'clock at night the next day. U.S. Air delivered it. So had a nightmare coming home, but everything was good out there. Had a great time. Had a chance to actually rest in a little bit and recharge. Had some client emergencies, one real big one that I had to take care of on, I guess it was Thursday night. Took care of that, and I had some big help from Ken here in the area. I'll talk about that next week, all the problems and all the things I've been faced with this week, which there have been a lot. I have a lot of stories in the trenches that I'm saving for the next couple weeks. Tonight's show, I want to get to all of the email that's been backing up. I quickly went through my list and just printed out last few emails that I want to get to. So I have a stack. So let's get started. This first one's from Bill. And this is all follow-ups and questions to different, you know, there's different questions, maybe follow-ups to topics that I've discussed in the past or recommendations for utilities. So we got a real good mixture for the topic tonight. Workgroup File Server. Hi, Mike. File Server is running Windows 7 Pro. Clients have upgraded workstation, but here's the problem, as they were refurbished computers and they were all named user. When a spreadsheet is open on the file server, it says user by user. I tried renaming the profile through the registry, but the name did not work. Finally, I created a new profile with the name John. Now, some files show open by John, but others still show open by user. I downloaded a Microsoft patch for this issue, and it did not work, and I've also cleared out all temp files. Your thoughts will be appreciated. I don't know if I'm oversimplifying this, but why not have a different user for each user, a different username and a different profile for each user, and then you're going to have the system reporting the right information that it's, you know, user one, user two, user three, and which file is opened by which user. But you're right. If you have all the systems in, with just one login called user, then you have a problem. Now, if you're trying to do security at all with any kind of real permissions, you might want to look at a small workgroup server where you could then define groups and every and have real user accounts that everybody has to log in, and then you can have read permissions for those who need to read and write permissions for those who want to write. You have a lot more control, and it's more secure if you have a real server, like a server 2012 standard, but then that may be too expensive. You can do group and file permissions using this peer-to-peer environment, but it gets very difficult when you do that because now you got to create all of those accounts on every single system that someone could be using. So the file server that you're using, you'd have to create every single account for all the accounts, and you can't change the password when you connect. You have to have the same password set on the systems so they can access the file level permissions. It gets pretty complicated if you don't have a real server and you don't have Active Directory, and there's lots of, it gets complicated real fast. I believe your answer is just make sure everybody has a unique account. This is from Bart, an idea for a show. I'm new to the show, so this may have already been covered. I would like to hear about Wi-Fi connecting smart TVs. This is actually very relevant. And receiver boxes to shared media folders on a PC. I can't seem to get the Sony devices to find the media PC, but have no problems with my son's Xbox. That's true. It would be interesting to hear another person's experience with such devices. Okay, you're mixing a couple technologies here, so here's what I'm going to cover. One, I know a lot of smart TVs come with Wi-Fi built-in and Ethernet. Unless you have incredible Wi-Fi, where your Wi-Fi access point is extremely close to the TV, for streaming any kind of media, I want wired Ethernet connection. That's why the house that I was working on, we had 40 network drops because of all the smart TVs in all the different bedrooms and all the different rooms. We want an Ethernet jack for the TV and then an Ethernet jack for whatever computer that person's going to be using in that room. And we still have impressive Wi-Fi. Nothing in the world can beat a wired connection. There is no Wi-Fi that they could create that can compete with wired. You're going to have some type of interference, some type of lag, some type of uplink. You can't guarantee a perfect connection as good as you can guarantee it with wires. Now, from a media player perspective, the Xbox is far, far, far superior than the Sony PlayStation. The new Sony PlayStation 4, I have it. And you can't read any media files from anywhere on the network. You are locked into the Sony environment. Only to recently that they released a firmware upgrade to allow you to connect a third-party thumb drive and device to be able to read music files. So Sony is a closed environment for the PlayStation, where the Xbox is a little more open and more of a media center PC. Nothing beats a home theater PC. A small box. Go to MaximumPC.com and do a home build if you can, or get someone to build a very small footprint that will have an SSD drive to boot. You only need Windows 7 Pro, a great video card, a nice high-end NVIDIA card that you will run an HDMI cable to your TV, and then a drive that you can store everything that would be your Western Digital Red NAS drive. Buy the biggest drive you can afford to put into this small box. Make sure it has good cooling in the fans. And this is what I had someone build, a really rock solid home theater PC for the media room for one of my clients. And it's incredible. Get a good Logitech wireless keyboard with the built-in trackpad or touchpad, so you can sit anywhere in the room and have that on your lap and you can control everything. That's the way to go. And now you can create a share on that and you can drop media files and it'll play perfectly. I like, and this is a little old school, the Western Digital Live TV Hub. I bought that a couple years ago. It's a terabyte hard drive. I love it. It just looks like a share on my network. I drag and drop any media file under the sun, and it plays it. That box, even though it can play Netflix and other things, I only use it just to play media files from movies or something, download it. Any file that I throw at it, it just plays. If you have a smart TV and you can get a wire to it, that's my first recommendation. You need storage at your TV with an HDMI connection from whatever that storage is, whether it's an Apple TV. And I don't like the new Apple TV. I like the older one that came with a hard drive. I want my media to be able to stream perfectly from a box that's directly connected to the TV. It just makes the performance better. Sure, you could stream it Wi-Fi from, if you have a really good Wi-Fi setup, from another device somewhere, located somewhere else in the house, but you are definitely subjecting that stream to chopping and performance issues, where if you have a really good HDMI connection to a device, and I don't care what it is, as long as it can play all the different file formats and have that connected to your TV. So in my house, it's a Live Western Digital TV Hub, and that's a little box, terabyte hard drive. Like I said, I can put music files, any kind of video file, and it works. That's where how I would consider building out. Certainly, if, and this is not looking at gaming, just as a home theater device, the Xbox One is far superior to the PlayStation 4 as a home theater device. Now, remember, I'm not comparing games, because that would be a whole different ballgame. Because I know my youngest loves the PlayStation 4 for all kinds of games over the Xbox One, and that's a debate all unto itself. And I cannot participate in that debate because I'm not a gamer. But just looking at it from a media center machine, I would certainly look at the home theater PC. Now, in the chat, someone mentioned Myth TV. I haven't heard that in a long time. There was a Linux distribution where you could sort of make your own DVR. And it was a whole distribution that was dedicated to a home theater machine and DVR capabilities, and that was the Myth TV. So you might want to look at that. I would assume that that's still around and still working well. So consider that. Great question, though. I didn't mind spending some time talking about that. This is from Bastion. As we all know, the development of TrueCrypt has been stopped last May because of vague reasons, and not everybody wants to or can migrate to BitLocker. I am right with you. I want to mention two things. Is TrueCrypt really unsafe? I don't believe it is. Or has it been stopped and said to be unsafe under pressure of the U.S. government and the NSA because they can't decrypt it. Now, I can't say that, but as it stands, I don't think anybody has broken anything, has broken the encryption of TrueCrypt. I have never heard of concrete vulnerability in TrueCrypt, and I concur. And why is BitLocker recommended, a proprietary product of a U.S. firm, which has for 100% a backdoor for the NSA? Well, I don't know about that, but I don't know why they picked BitLocker, so I can't answer that. These are the developers of TrueCrypt when they made that shocking announcement and changed the website saying that TrueCrypt for the future is no longer going to be supported, developed, and they recommend everybody going to BitLocker. There is a fork of TrueCrypt called VeraCrypt. VeraCrypt uses the original source code of TrueCrypt, but does not contain a number of improvements with regard to security, Volumes encrypted with TrueCrypt are not compatible with VeraCrypt. Ooh, that's not good. I think VeraCrypt can at least be used for personal use. I have not tested VeraCrypt, but want to do this when I have the time. And this is kind regards from rainy Netherlands, Bastian. Hey, thank you for writing in and bringing up the encryption and TrueCrypt discussion again. I have clients still using TrueCrypt. And until it's really broken and there's a problem, then I'll move them to another product. Now, BitLocker is convenient and easy to deploy because it's included with Windows 7 Ultimate and Windows 8.1 Pro. I have to wait until a lot of my clients upgrade to Windows 8.1 Pro because a lot of them have Windows 7 Professional, so BitLocker is not included. So we would incur great cost in moving away from TrueCrypt right now. I would also like to hear Steve Gibson and his opinion and weighing in on whatever the final testing and findings are for TrueCrypt, or is there another organization that's going to take the baton and continue the development of TrueCrypt, which I think is happening also. I want to wait and see. I'm in no rush to make a harsh decision either way, but I will link this VeraCrypt that you recommend, and we want to look at this cautiously and try it out personally first before we would dare do this with one of our clients. This is Austin, and it's regarding Brady's question on tools to disinfect a Mac, and he recommends Total Security Free, and there's a trial, and he has the link for the Mac download, so I will include that. Thank you. This is from Eric. Dell not recognizing power adapter. I have recently been having issues with Dell laptops not recognizing their power adapters. I Googled for answers, and every indication is that the solution is to flash the BIOS. I hate flashing the BIOS, especially when it seems to me there must have been some type of an update that I can just roll back. They are all Windows 7 Pro machines. Do you or your listeners have suggestions? Flashing the BIOS gives me the jeebies. Thanks, Eric. I am absolutely with you. I had a similar situation with a client that had 18 computers, and the fans all of a sudden started making a noise. The fans, and there's no way everybody's fan went bad at the same time. Now, they all could have been from the same, you know, manufacturing group, and they were all, you know, from the same builds, from the same parts. I started doing the research. They were all Dell Optiplexes, and found that updating to the newest BIOS would take care of this. And that's exactly what I did. And boy, I hated flashing the BIOS. And flashing the BIOS with systems that were a whole disk encrypted with TrueCrypt. So You want to talk about having the GBs and being nervous. I definitely did that, but I did it on one of our spare systems first. Here's what I recommend. In your environment, make sure do you have another system that you can test flashing that particular BIOS with. I was fortunate. I had a test machine. I flashed it. It worked. Everything looked good. And so that's exactly what I did. I hit every machine and individually flashed it. Sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and you have to flash the BIOS. Now, a funny story. A while back on one of my systems, I had a terabyte hard drive with some issues, and Carrie Holzman talked me into flashing the firmware on the drive. I'll never forget that night because I bricked the drive. The flash did not take of the firmware, and it totally nuked my drive, and I was unable to use it anymore, and I had to pop a new hard drive in and redo my system. So I hear you. I do not flash the BIOS on a regular basis unless there's a known issue, which it seems like you do have. And if I have a known issue and I read that that firmware or BIOS update is going to fix this particular problem, then I bite the bullet and do it. But I just don't flash a BIOS just for the sake of being the latest and greatest. I got to have an issue before I do it. I know a lot of techs disagree with that, and they want the latest, greatest firmware of everything. I'm not there. All right, this is from Ty. Hi, Mike. I listen to your show, though I must admit that most of it goes over my head. Oh, well, we live and learn. Could you please send me the link to reset Windows to its original settings? I don't understand this question. For some reason, IE will not load Blogspot on my laptop. The browser will not load either the dashboard or any of my blogs. Oh, okay. Now, see, they all load perfectly in other browsers. This is very odd. I've scanned for viruses and found nothing. Also, reset IE, nothing changed. Very frustrating. I don't understand reset Windows to its original settings. You can repair Windows, but that's a lot of work. If you have a problem with IE and you reset it and it's still not working, try upgrading or reinstalling the latest version. I would go to Microsoft.com. I would download the latest version of Internet Explorer that you can run on your system. Download that and see if that helps. I would do that before I would start looking into the operating system and making changes. If you're only having a browser issue, then I would only look for tweaks or fixes to the browser. I'm not sure about resetting Windows. The only way to do that is to reboot with your original disk and do a repair and do a reinstall over top of everything. But I think that's overkill for trying to fix your problem. Did you truly run every cleaner that you could run? Did you run JRT, Adware Cleaner, Rogue Killer, Malwarebytes Pro, Super Anti Spyware, and TDSS Killer? Run all them. Then reset IE again. Run CCleaner and clean out all of the cache, all of the cookies, all of the history. Fix all of the registry from CCleaner. Then I bet you Windows, IE will work. There's also some great utilities out there that repair just IE. You got the all-in-one repair, and then you also have, I think it's the Internet Repair Tools that also does repairs for Internet Explorer. So you have a lot of other options than to just start doing something to the operating system. This is from Scott. And Scott, thank you, thank you, thank you. This was in reply to my request a few weeks ago with a client that was having a video resolution issue within VMware Fusion and his Mac and running Windows 7, and he needed to fix the video settings so when he set it, it wouldn't auto change and when he changed the size. The fix is to edit the preferences file in the tilde library preferences VM Fusion preferences directory. It's very clear which file it is. There's a preferences file, and there's two commands that you need to add to that file. Once we did that, it fixed his problem. My client was so happy. If you want that fix, email me, miketechshow@gmail.com, and I will forward you the fix. But I'm not going to put it out there. Maybe I will, for anybody that wants to do this. And this is to disable auto screen resolution. You know what I'm going to do? I'll make it a text file that you can just click on and you can see the info for how to do this. This is from Richard. Bad sectors. I work for a small local repair shop in the UK. Even though I'm pretty tech savvy, I've never worked in a repair shop before. The guy before me and the guy I work with both suggest a new hard drive to any customer that has one bad sector. I always thought one or two is okay, so long as you've backed up and are aware of the possibilities the drive could go. They push the hard drive replacement just so they can offer a Windows reload for 96 lira and plus 65 lira for the drive. I would love your view on this, as I'm not sure if I should feel guilty telling customers they need all that work or not. The only tool we use is HDAT2, and as soon as they see a red mark, it's call the customer and recommend a reload. Thanks for your show. It's fantastic. Regards, Richard. Richard, I'm almost in their camp. I run Crystal Disk Info, and if I see yellow or red, I inform the customer first. I take a look at what it is that's bad. And if it's just a sector count, I want to keep an eye on that to see if it's getting higher or not, maybe run it again in a couple weeks. If they are having major performance issues, then I would run the diagnostics from the manufacturer. And if it says there's a hard drive failure, and I'm getting errors on Crystal Disk Info, that's it. Game over. I put a new drive in. Why mess around? It's not that expensive. I understand them wanting to uptick. It is the easy solution. But why mess around and risk a possible failure and loss of data? Absolutely. I completely agree. You got to have a foolproof backup, especially if you are seeing some bad sectors. Now, I will advise my client that if I run Crystal Disk Info, I see that there's some issues, I warn them and say, your drive's going to fail. Let's make sure we have a foolproof backup solution and make sure that that's in place. And if they won't put that in place, then I said, you're risking total loss of data. I might be back here later and then in a few weeks and happen to replace the hard drive anyway because it's going to fail and you may lose all your data. I guess I agree more than I disagree with what your shop is doing. I don't know if across the board I would do it on every one, but I'm sure there's a lot that with a certain error count, you should have a threshold that after this, you absolutely should put a new hard drive in. But once I start to see problems, hard drives are cheap. You got to replace it. This is from John. Syncback. Mike, I have been listening a long time and truly enjoy your show. I purchased Syncback Pro based on your liking it. Is there a step-by-step guide somewhere explaining how to back up my files and email, etc., and then restore to a new computer? I will find the right manual and link it for you. It's very simple. The main thing is not so much how to back it up, so much as to point to the areas, to the directories that you want to back up. Restoring's easy. It's just copying those files back to the path of which they were copied from. Remember, this is no proprietary storage for where they're backing up. It's just a copy. and a synchronization of the files. So those files are readable on whatever media that you're doing this to. If it's an external drive, then those files are all just right there, and you can copy them back to the original location when you need to restore. But I'll find you a manual for that. This is from Alan. I would like to recommend a couple useful programs and apps for you. Here's a very useful $2.99 iOS app for your network consulting business. It's called Network Analyzer, and it's an all-in-one iPhone and iPad app for network analysis, scanning, and problem detection. Like you, I also purchased the Microsoft Surface Pro 3. I didn't want to connect my SP3 to my TV via an HDMI cable. I found this $14.99 application called AirParrot. AirParrot allows you to wirelessly beam your screen or media files to a variety of media receivers. I have both the Apple TV and the Google Chromecast, which AirParrot works perfectly with. I do realize there are other more expensive solutions to accomplish the same things, such as the Microsoft Wireless Display Adapter and the ActionTech Screen Beam. I always enjoy your show. Keep up the great work. Alan, I can't believe I'm reading this email when today I had this very discussion with a client. They are considering a Surface Pro 3, and one of the things they have to do is annotate on the screen and beam it to a TV for their clients to see. And I have to come up with a solution this weekend. The timeliness of your email is perfect. Thank you. And I'll have the links in the show notes. This is from Jason. Crypto Wall USB stick. Mike, I don't know if you have ever heard of it, but Panda Antivirus has a USB stick vaccine utility. If you go to their site, you can download just the utility without the antivirus. We vaccinate all of our tech's USB sticks, USB hard drives, and computers. Since we have done this week, we have never gotten a virus or any of our USB sticks and hard drives due to a customer's infected machine. Basically, it creates an auto-run file that cannot be overwritten. On a PC, it changes the auto-run settings. Also, Bitdefender creates a similar tool as well. So check it out, Jason. Thank you very much. This is from Ken, and this is in response to the latest show, 525. I tried to view your latest show, but I got a message saying my Flash player was outdated. I click on the link to get the latest, installed it, but I still get an error that my Flash player is outdated. Any suggestions? I don't get any errors when trying to view the podcast on Google Chrome. I'm sure you mean listen. If anybody has issues with trying to play or hear my podcast, let me know. I don't know of any other problem except for possibly if it's a Flash issue, then what I would do, which browser? You mentioned that it's Chrome that works, but I believe it's IE11. Okay, the problem's in IE11. What you might want to do is go into Control Panel and then remove any of the Adobe Flash and then reinstall it and see if that helps. Hi, Mike. I am a network security administration student. I'm about 5 months shy of my associate's degree. I plan on going all the way to a master's degree. I'm trying to get an entry-level position, but it's tough. I was wondering if you have any recommendations for me. At this point, I am looking for a consultant like yourself who would take me under their wings. With pay would be nice, but I do not mind doing it to gain experience and enhance my resume in the process. I have experience working for Computer Geeks in the DC metro area, plus some contracting for Comcast as a technician. So I'm not totally new, but can use some more training. I'm in Maryland, by the way, and I love to have learned, and I have learned so much from your podcast. Thanks for the wonderful shows, Abdul. You know, it's a great question, and I'm wondering if you might want to look into temp services and see if you can get into, but this, see, you're not going to get mentoring that way. You really need to get an entry-level position in a networking department where they're going to take you and develop you within the corporate network. And that's the path that I used to like in the corporate world and would love taking young minds and someone that's very passionate about networking. They don't need a degree, but they need that ability to test and tinker, and they're not afraid of anything, and they're just willing to learn. And you'll make a mistake once, but you'll never make that mistake again. That's always the personality that I was always looking for in the corporate world. Unfortunately, not everybody looks at hiring that way. I'm not sure how you would find it except for looking for entry-level networking positions. A lot of those positions, they will mentor you and bring you along and develop you because that's what they want you to learn in their environment. And they want you to be molded as they want their network engineers molded. A typical corporation will look at that. You may need to look at a bigger company than a smaller, you know, smaller places doing some light consulting. I don't think I really answered your question. And if anybody has any feedback on better ways to find a mentor environment like that, let me know and I will definitely share it. Internship, that's the word I was looking for. Uncle Al just mentioned in the chat. You really want to intern somewheres. Going to Indeed.com and look for internships, IT internships in your area. And that's a good way to start. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. This is from John. Interesting. He linked an article that a student was being charged with bringing down their network using CCleaner. There's no way CCleaner brought the network. It's just that it was a utility that they didn't recognize. There's no way CCleaner would bring down a network unless you overwrote a critical server wiping files and wiping an area. You certainly can do damage on a server with CCleaner, but I really find it hard to believe that this was, you know, truly that this was the only program that this person used, and that's what they were using to arrest him. His comment is, mainstream media just doesn't get tech. Take a look at this article. I'll put it in the show notes. This is from Andrew. HIPAA. I hope all is well. I had a question for your show. I have a handful of small healthcare clients that store EPHI, which is electronic protected health information, on their systems. Recently, some of these clients started asking questions due to the ever-changing HIPAA regulations. This isn't my area of expertise, so I often don't have solid answers. I want to change this. Do you know where I can go that will give me a list of all the requirements in layman or tech terms without all of the extra bloat that most HIPAA sites seem to have? Thanks. Wow, I'm probably going to recommend a lot of the HIPAA sites you don't like. I'm not even up on every single HIPAA change. So I will try to find the right references to recommend that you can purchase from Amazon, but this is always changing. I will find some basic sites that should have enough information to satisfy the HIPAA requirements for the small businesses that you're covering. And I think I've listed them before in past shows, but I will find some links and I'll get them in there. This is from Sean. Just listen to your podcast about your recent dealings with crypto wall issue. We ran into that recently at my company, and unfortunately, shadow copy was not enabled. We were able to recover some of the employees' data by using a recovery program called Restore Ultimate. I had never used that particular program before, but I would think any other file restoration recovery program would work. Not sure what variant we were dealing with, but it looks like files were deleted and then encrypted, so the recovery program was able to get some of the deleted files back. Just something to keep in your back pocket in case you run into this again and the person does not have shadow copy enabled. At that point, there's nothing to lose by running a file data recovery program. That is solid advice from Sean. Sean, thank you very, very much. And I will list Restore Ultimate in the show notes. This is from Jorge, and it's also about SyncBack Pro. Hi, Mike. Long time I haven't talked to you via email. I'm still hooked listening to your show. Is this the backup application you still use and recommend? I have a customer that wants to use Dropbox as his backup strategy. I want to synchronize his network data with Dropbox using SyncBack Pro. Absolutely. When it comes to synchronization, that's my program of choice, and that's SyncBack Pro. Now, that's not for a full backup of a full image. That's where I like Shadow Protect, but SyncBack Pro for synchronization. Does the free version allow scheduling also? Yes, it does. What's the main difference? SyncBack Pro will sync files that are open where the free version won't. To me, that's a big issue and worth the $25 or $35 that they're asking for the Pro version. Now, I know there's a lot more features, but that's a biggie from the differences between the free and the Pro. Because how many times do clients forget to close the programs that they really want to sync? And you want to be able to grab that data even though they didn't close the program. This is Dante, Backup Storage. Question for you regarding backup media. I'm a big fan of Shadow Protect, as I know you are too. When backing up a client using Shadow Protect, what is your favorite backup storage device you like to back up to when backing up a server? Do you use external drives? Something with a swappable hard drive, cartridge, NAS? What about for off-site backups? What is your recommended size of a backup unit? Let's say, for example, the client is using 500 gig of a 1 terabyte hard drive. Do you suggest 2 times the size of the internal drive? What is your rule of thumb? Dante, great, great, great questions here. My strategy has been changing over the past couple months because of the alarming failure rate of the MyPassport and the Seagate portable drives that are just 1 terabyte. I've seen an alarming failure rate, so high that on a server, I will not use those drives anymore. There is a $40 external unit that needs to be plugged in that's USB 3, has a switch on it for a fan that will release and move a lot of the heat load off the drive. That enclosure with a Western Digital Red NAS drive is a great backup solution. I have a couple companies right now with some major Shadow Protect set up on multiple servers with some round robin backups with these devices. We also want them off site. So you just buy another external unit and you have them unplug it and plug it in. You can keep the USB cable and the power cable connected and just have another external unit with a drive in it. Now, the size of the drive depends on your retention policy in Shadow Protect. If I'm backing up 100 gig of data and I'm doing a full backup, once a week, and I'm doing incrementals during the week, how many full backups do I want to use and be available? If I want three full backups and all the incrementals, that's 300 gig, and then enough for the incrementals, which are pretty small normally. So you figure 500 gig will give me 3 weeks retention. So how many weeks do you want to keep, and just do the math, and then buy the appropriate Western Digital Red drive? A great question from the chat. What's the difference between the black and the red? As a matter of fact, I'm going to even go further. With Western Digital, you have green, blue, red, and black. This is very easy. Green and blue, don't use them. The blues are what those massive failures I've been dealing with for the last couple years from Dell is the Western Digital Blue. The Western Digital Blue, they fail. I don't like them. They're cheap and they fail. The Western Digital Green, I will never use because the green will throttle down when you're not being used. And sometimes it's asleep when you try to write to it and you have all kinds of problems. The green, forget it. Just say no. No green, no blue. Now, if you have a desktop that you are running on a regular basis with your operating system, it's Western Digital Black. The Black Caviar, there's nothing better. Then, if it's storage, NAS devices, and these drives are built to be part of network-attached storage or constant writes for backups, they're optimized and set up just for that purpose, for NAS and for backups. That's what the Western Digital Red NAS. NAS, you want red drives, backups, red drives, internal drives for your servers, your workstation, the black. Just forget about the blue, forget about the green. That is not just Mike Smith's opinion. That's also a couple consultants that I know and work with that we all are of this opinion when it comes to the Western Digital Color. So that was a great question to align with this. And Dante, I hope that helps you in answering all of your questions. And I back up to a NAS right now with the Black Armor NAS that I have in my house, and I put 4 red 3-terabyte NASs, giving me a total available of 9 terabytes, and I'm using my Shadow Protect on my desktop to back up to that. It's working flawlessly. I also built one of those devices that not only do I that I talked about, that enclosure with a Western Digital 4-terabyte NAS when Newegg had some great discounts on drives for Black Friday. I made sure that I took advantage of some of those drives that I would use. Right now, I think we have it covered. I think I've answered all of the iterations of your backup question, Dante. Please follow up if you have any more. I really appreciate it. That is a great question to close the show with. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed to the show. But more importantly, it's the holiday season, and you're going to be buying gifts. You're going to be looking for a gift. You're going to be shopping at Amazon. And if you or any family member, neighbor, friend, anyone you know is going to Amazon to make a purchase, please use my link, amazon.mikenation.net. Your price is the same, but a small commission comes back to support the show. It's a great way to show your support, especially now for the holiday season. And I can't think of a better stocking stuffer than an Amazon gift card. Or how about for the geek in your life that if they don't have an Amazon Fire HD, what a great gift. Inexpensive. Kindle, great device for anybody that's reading books that they haven't made that jump to the digital books yet. It's a great gift. There, anything you need for Christmas, you're going to be able to find at Amazon. Again, my Amazon link, amazon.mikenation.net. That's it. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And from the bottom of my heart, thank you so, so much for staying subscribed and listening. I really, really appreciate it. I will see you back here next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.